distinction between natural and supernatural. With Augustine, he focuses on the fact that they're both revelation. Okay? And now, the difference in emphasis does lead to a lot of differences later on, but they're both in agreement. There's natural revelation and supernatural revelation. But with Augustine, I think he was right to emphasize it's still all revelation. Yeah. And it's like Cornelius Van Til. I don't agree with everything he said, but he argued that arguing against God's existence is like arguing against the existence of air. Okay? While you're arguing against air, you're taking air in. Okay? And arguing against God's existence presupposes that we're rational beings, which seems to presuppose that there's some rational ground for our existence. So just to reason and debate presupposes that we live in a rational world, which seems to presuppose that the rational world has a rational ground. Okay? And, okay, number five, about sin and salvation. Basically, we were created good, but now we're fallen. So the image of God has become distorted or defaced. So we were created good, but we fell. And then through the work of Christ, God has redeemed us. Though we may choose to reject that redemption. All you have to write for that is, you know, mankind created good, fell into sin, redeemed through Christ. Man's destiny, it's either eternal life and eternal fellowship with God, or eternal separation from God. Of course, God is the only source of true joy, so eternal separation from God means eternal misery. For morality, ethics is transcendent. I always hate that. Ethics, it sounds like a plural, but it's really not. Ethics is transcendent, or you could please say morality is transcendent, and is based on God's good character. Boy, is he saying a lot here. And I don't even know if I should get into it, but what he's saying by morality is transcendent, what he means is moral laws are not based in individuals. You know, if each person decides what is right in his own eyes, if the moral law comes, if the ultimate authority for the moral law is each individual, then we cannot call the actions of Osama bin Laden evil. Okay? So others would say, okay, maybe each society invents the moral law. Problem there is, if each society determines what is right and what is wrong, then the American society can't condemn the actions of the Taliban. So others would say, well, maybe it's the world community, world consensus. Problem is, you know, do we really know what the world consensus is? You know, have they given us these little buttons where we can vote on every little issue so we know what the world really thinks? And then even when we have a good idea what a world consensus is, it's usually an embarrassment. I mean, like, you know, the world consensus used to be the world was flat. The woman was property of her husband. Slavery was perfectly permissible. It was just part of life. So if the world consensus has been wrong in the past, what makes us think it's going to be right now? So we need a moral law that transcends all individuals, all societies, and world consensus. And by the way, I'd even add to that, because that's what he means by ethics is transcendent. You can even go beyond that. Atheists protest because they want to make the world a better place to live. Bingo. What are they saying there? They're saying that there's a moral law above the world, and that the world of the past and the world of the present is wrong, and we want to make the world a better place to live. So they're acting like there's a moral law above the world consensus, and it doesn't change with time. So we can condemn the actions of the past as wrong, and the actions of the present as wrong, and argue for a better world. So that makes no sense unless there's a moral law that is above the world consensus and doesn't change with time. What's that?
How did they find that out?
Yeah, well, the thing is, sometimes we have to stop listening to what a person says they believe and watch and listen to the voice of their actions, and then so basically they deny absolute moral laws, but you know, they have to live in God's universe because this is the only one there is. So you can reject the God who created the universe, you can reject the creator of the universe, but you still have to live in his universe because there's no other universes in which to live. I would use the term immoral.
Okay,
immoral. Just because of the way amoral is being used. Amoral is immoral, but a rock is amoral. It's just not part of rational categories.
So, like,
but
amoral would be something that's an object, but immoral is something that is.
Yes, I would say that the only good that a person has is from God. Now, what I'm not saying is that only believers can have some type of goodness to them, because even Calvin's view of total depravity, and I don't agree with every aspect of his view of total depravity, he was not saying that man is totally bad. What he was saying is every aspect of man is fallen and is no longer pleasing to God.
We're in bondage.
Yeah. But Calvin would openly admit, oh yeah, his non-believing neighbor can do a nice deed for him. You know, in other words, non-believers can do good things in my book because I'm imperfect and I don't demand perfection. But they can't do good things in God's book. And the thing is, God cannot accept something even if it's partially evil. It doesn't have to be totally evil before, you know. Calvin didn't mean by total depravity, he meant we were as bad off as we can get. He didn't mean we were as bad as we could get. Because, you know, if you set your mind to it, you could be as bad as Hitler. But just because we're not as bad as Hitler doesn't mean we're not as bad off as Hitler, apart from Jesus.
So for morality, you have to confess to God, doesn't that report me not your Christ one, but you have to confess to God. And looking at the separation from God, then look at hell as the separation, no separation from God, and that is a total immoral, there's no moral there. Where when you look at heaven, there is
it's actually a little more complex than that, because number one, hell, from my understanding, especially when you read Revelation 14, that those who are tormented day and night are tormented day and night in the presence of the Lamb and his angels. Hell is not the separation from the omnipresence of God. It's eternal separation from the fellowshipping presence of God. So, but you know, like a lot of people think Satan's going to be or is in charge of hell or whatever. Well, number one, nobody's there yet. Number two, when he's there, he's going to have the lowest position there. God's in charge of hell. But we're totally separated from God as far as any kind of friendship and communion and that type of thing. Here is the philosophical dilemma, and it was dealt with by Augustine, Aquinas after him. Does everybody agree? God, raise your hand if you believe God created everything that exists. Okay. Evil is a thing that exists. Does everybody agree that evil is a thing that exists? Okay. Therefore, God created evil. Okay, you see where that goes? Now, there are some guys, hyper-Calvinist, like Gordon Clark, who believe that God did create evil. That Adam fell because God made him fall. And Lucifer fell because God made Lucifer fall. I'm not a hyper-Calvinist. I don't agree with that. I think that God gave Adam and the angels free will, and we abused it. So if we believe that evil is a thing that exists, a real thing that exists, but God did not create it, the only out for us is the out that Augustine and Aquinas held to, and that is that evil is a real thing that exists, but it has to exist in something good. And it exists as a perversion or a corruption of good or an absence of a good that should be there. For instance, a rock cannot see, but that's not evil, because rocks were never intended to see. But human beings were created. One of the things we were supposed to have the power to do was to see. So when a human being can't see, it's a product of evil. Now, it doesn't mean that that blind person did anything wrong to bring it on it, but it meant if Adam and Eve had not fallen in the garden, all human beings would see today. Okay? So it's a privation, a lack of a good that should be there. Now, when you follow that out, what that means is you can't totally remove the presence of good. I mean, there are good things we can say about Lucifer. He's very, very intelligent, very, very powerful. Somebody might say, well, power is evil. Well, God's all powerful. Does that make God all evil? So power in itself is not evil. It's the abuse of power. So, but coming along those lines, it's that evil, by definition, is a perversion of something that is good. In other words, the world is fallen not because it's as bad as it could possibly get. The world is fallen because it falls short of God's perfection, which explains why our Buddhist friends can be so nice to us. Now, it's a niceness that we can accept, but it's not a niceness that God will accept. God only accepts perfect niceness. And guess what? The only way we can do perfect righteousness is by allowing Jesus' righteousness through the power of the Holy Spirit work through us. Yeah?
You mentioned righteousness, and I was going to mention that because it was mentioned that you cannot have morality without God. You can have morality without God. You cannot have righteousness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and the thing is, exactly, and you know, our own righteousness is filthy rags before the Lord. The other aspect, though, here is, part of the... Is there goodness, even with Calvin's doctrine of total depravity? Would Calvin say that there's a goodness? Could Calvin agree that there's a goodness? Now, he liked hyperbole and talked about fallen man as if they were beasts, but I believe Calvin would acknowledge that there's a goodness in all people. Now, he doesn't mean what the New Ager means by that. What he means is the image of God, though marred, there's still, you know... See, we fall short of the glory of God. We fall short of glorifying God to the extent to which he created us to. But human life, the life of a non-believer, is still infinitely more worthy than the life of a dog, okay? And that's because man was created in God's image. Though marred, it is still wrong to kill even non-believing human beings. So there's some goodness there. At the same time, it's not a goodness that God is going to accept. In fact, God can't accept anything that falls short of his perfection. So basically what I'm saying is, there is no goodness apart from God, but even non-believers have some of that goodness because they were created by God. The fact of the matter is, that's not good enough. In fact, I think that's one of the reasons why there's an eternal hell, why God doesn't just annihilate the wicked, is because there is still value to human life, even those who have rejected Christ forever and ever.
So does that make morality kind of a loose term almost, because people can be like environmentally influenced and have morals, right, without God?
Mm-hmm.
So the way we use morality is basically a loose term. I mean, morality through God is different than human morality.
The thing is, and Aquinas breaks these down, God's eternal laws and then natural laws. What he meant was God's laws written on our hearts, and then the divine laws in God's word written clearly, because we could suppress the light of our conscience and all. But basically, here's what it boils down to. Man is incurably moral. Even if we try, even Adolf Hitler and Osama bin Laden think Hitler thought he was doing the right thing, and bin Laden, if he's still alive, he thinks he's doing the right thing. And the most ruthless, whether it's Ted Bundy or whatever, people, there is no such thing as a human being who doesn't have some concept of right and wrong. Even the people who say there's no such thing as right and wrong, when you say that there is, and that you want what is right taught in the public schools, they will tell you in different words, but they will tell you that you are morally wrong to call their actions morally wrong, because there is no such thing as that which is morally wrong. So basically what I'm getting at is that the good God has left his imprint on all of us, and we have done our best to blur that imprint. But there's still some of it left, and so there's still value to all human life. Yeah, but it will not earn, it will not earn favor before God. God cannot, his fellowshipping presence, he cannot allow sin into his fellowshipping presence.
The word morality, however, Christianity is that just a Christian word?
Is there other, can other Judaism,
do they have morals?
Yeah, the thing is, in the Jewish faith and the Islamic faith, their view of morality is that there are eternal, unchanging moral laws that come from God. So they're in agreement with us on that. Now, sin and salvation, there's not agreement. Trinity, there's not agreement. But when you get to like pantheism, ultimately reality is beyond good and evil. So you take off Darth Vader's mask and he's the father of the good guy. He's the father of Luke Skywalker or whatever. I don't know the names of these guys. The Force has a good side and an evil side, because ultimately the Force is beyond categories of good and evil. Atheism. An atheist might want absolute moral laws, but he's got nothing. His worldview can't produce them. So basically, in the Christian worldview, each one of these has an adequate, powerful explanation. You step outside of the Christian worldview, and the further you get from the Christian worldview, the weaker the explanation gets.
Like you said, anybody can have their own morals. They can make up their own morals from environment.
Yeah. Okay, here.
Where you come from, You know, I was taught this and I was taught that. That's your moral.
Okay. Let's say I'm a moral relativist. What's right for me is right for me. It doesn't have to be right for you and vice versa. Okay? So I want to do my own thing. Let's say I like dancing. So I'm over here dancing. Okay? You come up to me and your moral thing is crushing. Okay? So you come up to me and you want to crush me. Okay? Now, what will the moral relativist say to the crusher? The moral relativist will say to the crusher, what's right for me is right for me, it doesn't have to be right for you, and vice versa. Okay? So you can't crush me because I don't want to be crushed. See, that doesn't follow. That's the view of moral absolutes, where there are moral laws that apply to all people at all times and all places. Thou shalt not crush. If you want to crush and I want to dance, while I'm dancing, I have no response to you. No roadblock to throw up to keep you from crushing me. But that's what moral relativists are doing. They're saying, look, man, you're intolerant, you Christians. You can't tell the homosexual that it's a sin to partake in homosexuality. What's right for you is right for you, doesn't have to be right for me, and vice versa. But what is he doing? He's saying you can't make moral value judgments. But he just did. He just made a moral value judgment on, you know, he's saying there's no such thing as right and wrong, so let's throw the word should out of our vocabulary. Therefore, you shouldn't judge others. And he just brings it right back in there. Humanist Manifesto number 2. They say that ethics are autonomous. Each person self-governs himself. They determine what is right and what is wrong.
Right.
Okay? So the moral relativist. But then, 2 paragraphs later, Humanist Manifesto number 2, they say, therefore, any sexual act between consenting adults. Well, what does that mean? It means they're against rape and they're against pedophilia. But they just got done saying, you know, that ethics are autonomous, which means that they're supposed to be moral relativists. So where did they come up with this veiled prohibition against rape and pedophilia? Well, they resurrected it from the Christian worldview. Like Nietzsche said, they went through God's pockets before they threw him off the bridge. And so, see, that's the only way that atheism or any other worldview appears to be livable, is by saving some of the remnants of Christianity, keeping some residue from Christianity to make the worldview appear livable.
What is the society before?
Well, Paul answers that exactly in Romans 2:14 and 15. He said, Gentiles who do not have the law, God's law written on tablets of stone, or the Old Testament, when they try to do the right thing and try to refrain from doing the wrong thing, they're showing that the law was written on their hearts, with their consciences bearing witnesses, and basically a guilty conscience when they do the wrong and feel pretty good when they do the right thing. So basically God wrote his laws on our hearts, but when we became experts at quenching the voice of our conscience, and when we became experts at corrupting God's witness of himself in creation, then God said, okay, I'm going to have to write it to him and, you know, give it to him in written form. And one of the reasons why I think we're near the end times is because now we're becoming experts at perverting and corrupting God's written word. So what God clearly says, you got people who say the Bible is the word of God and without error, and they're teaching things that are blasphemous, that are you know, just as heretical as it gets. And so we're becoming experts now with postmodernism. It is the tops when it comes to perverting the scriptures, because in postmodern thought, the author doesn't determine what the text says. The community that of readers determine what the text means. So the gay community, Jesus is the greatest proponent of gay rights in the history of mankind. To the Marxist community, these are postmodern communities. To the Marxist community, it's called liberation theology. Jesus is the greatest Marxist revolutionary who ever lived. So I mean, when we're dealing, and this is what you're going to deal with on college campuses, when people give themselves that kind of license to say the truth is a lie and lie is truth. You know, God says, "What are those who call good evil and evil good?" We're living in those days. Yeah. And then that's the promotion of evil. Romans 1, 18 and 32, promotion of evil is the final stage. That's what we call political correctness today. People now march to defend their right to sin in horrible ways rather than acknowledging their guilt. You know, sinful people at least used to sin in their closets. But now we're prideful about it, and they slam Christians. You're the intolerant ones, because now evil has become good, and good has become evil. And finally, would ethics be transcendence based on God's good character? Remind me, we'll talk about that next week. But for history is linear. It's going somewhere. It's a meaningful sequence of events leading to the fulfillment of God's purposes for humanity. All I have to say is history is linear, it's meaningful, and God has a purpose for it. History is linear, it's meaningful, and God has a purpose for it. You know what? I'm going to just go a couple minutes over time. When he says that ethics is transcendent, that means ethics is beyond mankind. They come from God, and it's based on God's good character. Here was another ancient philosophical dilemma. Does God will something because it's good? Or is it good because God wills it? Okay? See, if something is good just because God wills it, then it makes the good arbitrary. If something is good just because God wills it, in other words, why is murder wrong? Which is because God says it, period. Well, it's okay to say that, but if we mean that there's just because God wills it, automatically it's good, then God is arbitrary. God went eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Okay, the world I'm going to create, murder is evil, arbitrarily, and feeding hungry people is good, arbitrarily. Okay? So in other words, if he wills it, but there is no good reason why he willed it, then in the end, God just went eeny, meeny, miny, mo. And God could have willed, and by the way, Gordon Clark believed this, but God could have created a universe in which murdering innocent people was good, and feeding hungry people was evil. So most Christians, and I agree with most Christians on this, say no, God something isn't good because God wills it, but God wills it because it is good. But then the atheists will say, okay, well, if God wills it because it's good, then the standard of good is above God. God can't will what is evil. He has to obey the law that's above him. So now God's not the ultimate. But the answer is, this is the answer here. The standard is not above God. God is the standard. God's will is only, God's will submits only to God's good nature. God by nature is good, and so when he wills, he must will the good.
So in other words, in order to know what's good, you have to understand the character of God.
That's a consequence of that. But all Sire's getting at here is that morality is transcendent. It comes from a moral lawgiver, which is above man. We call this moral lawgiver God. But God is not an arbitrary monarch who just says, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, okay, killing people is evil and hugging them is good. God's not arbitrary. He really does will the good. But if it's not that the standard is above him, God is the standard. He wills. His will is subservient to his good nature.
So he will never need to come
to. If God didn't exist, nothing would exist. But we can look at different somethings. and also trace them back to God. Now, maybe they're a little bit too bold, but there's a, you know, but the medieval theologians used to argue, grant me the existence of a blade of grass, and I'll prove God's existence to you. And yeah, they were a little prideful there, but the fact of the matter is, if God didn't exist, neither would that blade of grass. And what I'm going to do next week is we'll look at what I call the cumulative case for God. In fact, if you could read that chapter in the Theism versus Atheism, and then as soon as you buy James Sire's book, The Universe Next Door, start reading through that. In fact, if you can get through the chapters on Christian theism and deism, that would be really good. But I'll make a cumulative case for God's existence, for the existence of a personal God. Basically, I don't put all my eggs in one basket. I say you look at several different aspects of human experience, and in each of these aspects of human experience, it's more reasonable, a more plausible explanation is that God exists rather than that he does not exist. And if you read the whole debate, you'll see Michael Martin never even touches that. He's off in his own la-la land. I don't know. He's brilliant, so I'm sure he understood what I was arguing at. But he, you know, when it comes to moral values, I think the existence of the God of the Bible is an adequate explanation. And I think atheism, what atheism does, it either explains away the data and says, well, there are no moral absolutes, or it acknowledges the existence of moral absolutes but says they're just there. Well, the worldview is supposed to explain things, to say they're just there. Bertrand Russell said about the universe, it's just there, in a debate in the 1940s. We should say that it's just there. That's not an explanation, that's a non-explanation. So atheism either explains away the evidence, you know, is either a non-explanation or is a very inadequate explanation. And if we have an adequate explanation, and I think we do in Christian theism, then as for me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. But okay, well, what I'll do is we're officially ended right now. So if you have any other questions at all, feel free to ask them, although I would like to try to catch a 9:50 ferry, so I got about 10 minutes. But basically, I'm not going to, you know, you class dismissed, but if you do want to ask some questions, we got another 10 minutes or so.
What are we supposed to read out of James Sire's book?
I think it's the first two chapters, Christian theism and deism. Actually, first three chapters, A World of Difference, that's his introductory chapter, World of Difference, and then the chapter on Christian theism and deism. If you can get through those three chapters, that would be great. And if you could read my opening statement in that debate, that would be fantastic as well. Now, everybody wrote their names on this, and everybody signed the registration form, right?
Green card.
What's that?